Welcome to day 13 of the UFC 100 mega coverage audio here on MMATorch.com VIP site, as well as the iPhone app. This is MMA Torch editor Jamie Pennick, and I'm joined by Torch columnist Jason Bent. And today we're going to discuss the main card of UFC 100 and whether the right five fights were picked. Well, really, it's the other two outside of the main three fights, and take a look at maybe some undercard fights that deserve to be on this card or deserve to be on a main card somewhere else. So, Jason, just first off, overall, do you think they got this right with the two fights that they put on under Bisping Henderson, GSP Alves, and Lesnar Mir?
Indeed, they got it right. John Fitch had been buried before. He deserves to be on the main card of this fight. I mean, one of the top welterweights in the world, save for GSP, perhaps Thiago Alves, so that's proper. As far as Akiyama Belcher, Akiyama's way too big to be on an undercard, period. So that has to be there. You look at the representation of each of the countries, and it's just such a perfect mix. The right five fights made the card, but there's so many good fights on this card that there was a strong case for Jones O'Brien, Bonner Coleman for the right reasons, but I cannot justify taking Fitch, Thiago, and Akiyama Belcher and relegating them to the undercard for those two fights. I can't do it. So in that respect, this is the proper card. I couldn't change anything. While I can make arguments for others, they're not strong enough to replace what is already there.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, this is such a packed UFC 100 card that you've got three fights on this undercard that legitimately could be on pretty much any other main card if you didn't have John Fitch on this card, or if you didn't have Akiyama making his debut. Because you just look at the top fight on the undercard, Coleman Bonner. You've got a UFC Hall of Famer in Mark Coleman, and one half of the catalyst fight for the UFC getting to that next level, Sevener. And these two are clashing at a time when both need a win. Both are coming off of losses. Coleman's very much winding down his career, if he hasn't gone past his expiration date already. And Stefan Bonner is looking to regain some of what he had before steroid controversy and knee injury and other things that have happened with him. So the two of them are going to go at it on the undercard in what should be a definitely spirited affair and a very interesting fight that people are going to want to see. On pretty much any other card other than this one with two title fights and Bisping Henderson and the other two that are on the main card, that one is a fight that would be right up there as the third or fourth build card or fight for that card.
I mean, the thing is with this card, and I completely just lapsed and didn't even bring up Danzig Miller. You've got a fight there which could be at the top of the card, not necessarily a main event, but the top of the card on a fight night. I think that's a perfect setting for it. And what's so remarkable about Bonner Coleman is, like you said, you've got the UFC Hall of Famer in Coleman. You've got one of the catalysts for the UFC getting to this point in Bonner. And what I think is even more, another wrinkle that's fascinating is look back at when we thought Coleman was going to fight Lesnar. And people thought that could possibly be a good test for Brock. And here we are now, and it's like, Coleman's not really much of a test for too many people in our eyes. So it's weird how his comeback was so heralded, and then we saw what he could do at this age, and you're like, oh, geez, but you still wonder what he has left. He's Mark Coleman, and I think that's going to persist. So Stefan Bonner needs a win. Mark Coleman needs more than a win. He needs to show that he still belongs as far as being licensed. I mean, he's running just perilously close to still be a category as far as in that respect for his safety. But that's a fantastic fight that belongs on a main card somewhere, just not this one. Danzig Miller, that's fight night material, and it's not because to slight those guys, but it's to give them the proper pedestal for them to be on so more eyes can watch them fight, because that is one of the most evenly matched fights on the card. It's a fantastic bout. They both need a win for opposite reasons. Miller is just shooting on the way up, and Danzig has got to avoid being kicked out of the UFC. So that's a great fight. He's an Ultimate Fighter winner. I think that's just fight night quality, a star quality fight night now. You've got John Jones, who is one of the guys who's going to be the future. I mean, holy cow, he's 21 years old. I mean, he's done more in just a short period of time, especially a showing against Bonner, that he's the real deal. He's the equivalent of a 19-year-old baseball player who blitzes through single-A, double-A, triple-A, gives the call-up, and hits about 400 in September. You know, you need this guy to have a presence, too, so that people can get a feel for him, to care about him in the future. And it's so bad for Jones to have been featured on 94, and it's possible he's not even going to be seen this time if his fight doesn't make air.
Yeah, and you look at that Miller-Danzig fight, and like you said, it's definitely fight night material. That it could be the second fight on a fight night card, because you've got Danzig, who is a former Ultimate Fighter winner, and Miller, who has looked very good in his fights as well, but both are coming off of losses. Danzig is only 1-2 in the UFC since winning the Ultimate Fighter, so he's very much in danger of being the first non-comeback winner to be out of the UFC, as Travis Luter is already out, but he was in the UFC before the Ultimate Fighter. So he's someone that's very much on the chopping block in the lightweight division, because it's such a stacked division that both guys need a win, which will make that fight even more exciting than it would have been otherwise. And then you touched on it with John Jones. I mean, if anyone should be featured on one of these big pay-per-views and these big stages, it's a guy like John Jones. I mean, at 21 years old, he's got 8 fights under his belt in a year and a half of training MMA. He fought all 8 of those fights in less than a year's time, won all 8 of those fights, and his 2 UFC fights, he had very clear decision victories. His performance against Stephen Bonner at UFC 94 was just something awesome to watch, because he's pulling off these Greco-Roman throws and these different throws from the clinch that were just very unorthodox, and he was finding ways to get Bonner to the ground, and he wasn't even trying to really keep him there. It was just more to do damage, and he's so unique and fun to watch, because we're watching him develop and watching him come along. But a guy like John Jones is a guy that's going to be an absolute star in the UFC 3-4 years down the line, especially if he keeps up the pace that he's at. And his bout against Jake O'Brien should be a really, really good fight, with Jake O'Brien, who had success at heavyweight, now down at light heavyweight, and looked good against Christian Welich when they both dropped. And it's just a really good matchup that you put it on 101 or 102 or 103 or 104 later this year, and it's definitely on the main card. But because of how packed the show is, it gets relegated to undercard status, and it makes sense. I mean, John Jones still, he's 2-0, but he's still an unproven fighter with only a year under his belt. There's plenty of setbacks that could be had at 21 years of age, but he's still someone that people will want to see. And it will be a shame if that fight in some way, shape, or form doesn't find a way to make some appearance on the show.
Yeah, and see, that's the most disappointing thing, is because the bulk of fans who watch the UFC, order the pay-per-views, the bulk of them are not purchasing the DVD, and they're not logging on to the UFC.com to watch the undercard bouts, because most times when something is called an undercard preliminary bout, it loses its luster just because of its placement. It makes no sense, you know, with some of these fighters like John Fitch, but to a lot of fans, if you're not on the main show, you're not one of the main fighters. It's all about the perception. So it's going to be just a travesty for a guy like John Jones to get buried like that and be out of sight, out of mind, because he's going to be up on the main card soon enough against just better talent all of the time, because the kid is a future superstar. He's so marketable. His unorthodox style is just, it's his style, it's his trademark, and it works. He's the only one that can do it, and it's just going to be a trademark of his, where it's something you can market. It's a niche, it's a wow factor. In that respect, he's a superstar in the making. Other than the fact, I mean, a year and a half, and he's this talented, but yeah, being on the undercard, on the prelims, if you're not making air, a lot of people are not even going to really know your fault. And that's just sad. That's just so sad. But right now the UFC has so much talent that fighters like this are being relegated to the undercard, whereas you look over at, like, Strikeforce, they're doing the best they can with what they've got, catchweight bouts. And you look at the UFC, and there's so much talent, but here we are arguing about fights, you know, where to put them. It's almost like there's not enough cards. I mean, our pay-per-view bills are high enough, but it's like, hey, there could be some more cards here because we've already listed three fights, which could be long on the main card of another show. UFC 100 is just that deep. I mean, UFC 100 is so deep, it's like an unemployment line in Detroit. I mean, it's just it's fantastically deep. There's just too much here. And realistically, they could have booked a longer period of time, charged even more money, and shown us all of the fights, and that would have been awesome. I would be happy to pay it, but I would for what I'd be getting. It's a shame for guys to be away from the bright spotlight and from the fans who aren't going to pay enough attention to follow them, but there's no way you can replace what is on the card. You just can't because it makes perfect sense. You can't slight those guys, but somebody's got to get slighted. I mean, somebody has to open. Somebody has to open the show. It's just a matter of flipping a coin and seeing who, because, you know, there's just so much talent from top to bottom in the UFC overall. I mean, there used to be a time where we'd look at shows and we're like, oh, that's a one-fight show, and the rest of it's filler. But right now, they're giving us three-headed monsters constantly. I mean, from UFC 92 and just all the way around, we're getting just a dearth of just super, super fights, main event, main event, main event. Like, here we are, we're getting, you know, three main event fights, one show, and we're lucky. We're lucky to have this problem to complain about.
Yeah, and you talk about, you know, you always have to have that one fight on the undercard that has the argument for being there. Someone's got to get slighted. That happened to John Fitch at UFC 94 when he fought Akihiro Gono after coming off of his five-round loss to George St. Pierre in the main event of UFC 87. So he went from, you know, headlining that show to not even making the pay-per-view broadcast in January. So they're not going to slight him again. His fight against Paulo Thiago deserves to be on the main card. You know, Paulo Thiago defeated his teammate Josh Koscheck in his debut, so there's that backstory coming into it, along with the fact that the only two welterweights really that have an argument for being better than John Fitch right now are fighting in the co-main event on this show, and not to mention he's fought both of them and he's 1-1 against them. So really, he completely deserves to be on this card. And then Yoshihiro Akiyama, I mean, complete Japanese superstar. He's South Korean and Japanese. He has huge followings in both countries, one as a hero, the other as a complete villain, because in his native South Korea, he is hailed as a hero. In Japan, he's a complete bad guy to those fans, but he's still the highest ratings draw of almost any any fighter over in Japan. And he's coming over to make his debut in the cage, in the octagon, against a guy who pretty much continued the string of the pride curse against Dennis Kang in his last fight, and he's looking to do the same here. I mean, Yoshihiro Akiyama in the UFC is a big deal that a lot of mainstream fans don't realize is a big deal. And they're going to find out with this fight one way or another, because the numbers coming from Japan and South Korea will tell the story on that.
Yeah, the Sexyama war wagon is gassed up and ready to go. It's just there's a large portion of the world that isn't aware of it yet, and they're ready to hop on. And I really don't think Alan Belcher can do it. But he could. This isn't just a squash match, even though it really, you know, could end up going that way. But this is a pretty good matchup. Akiyama is going to show his wares to people who weren't aware of him. And just the Japanese presence alone is worth whatever his fee is just to put him on the card, because it's all about that globalization, that footprint on the world. And that's where this card from top to bottom, as far as the representation of the countries, makes sense. But, you know, Akiyama is top shelf draw over there. And it's just like here, he's kind of an afterthought to everything else on the card. And that, again, shows you how amazing this card is. like you mentioned with John Fitch, Paulo Thiago, that's a super fight. We don't really know enough about Thiago yet, but he dusted Josh Koscheck, and John Fitch was just headlining against GSP. It just so happened he ran into GSP. I mean, these are just, you could make a claim, you could really dig into the nuts and bolts of each fight and make a case of why it's a great fight and where else you would put it, but UFC 100 is it. I mean, it's just, it's a super, super thing. It's just like a, it's like a Woodstock of sorts, and you've got all of these great acts that somebody's got to go first, and you've got to have somebody going last, and in this case, Lesnar and Mir, you know, that's, they have to. That's it. That's the heavyweight title, and in any combat sport, the heavyweight title just holds the most weight. It just, it captivates everyone. It's all about the heavyweights, even though in MMA, each division is their own entity, but still, in the end of it, heavyweights are your, just your biggest, your power. I mean, the power of Brock Lesnar, he can draw sitting on a stool. Brock Lesnar could sit on a stool, butt naked, and probably draw enough buys just because it's Brock Lesnar. And you wouldn't see anything because of his hands anyway, but he's Brock Lesnar. And this show is just bigger than anything, and it's going to get better. This isn't the be-all, end-all. If it is, then, you know, it's sad. But the great thing is it's not. UFC 200, you know, is going to be inherently bigger. The sport hasn't even scratched the surface yet.
And that's the thing. This is a card that completely lives up to the billing, Jason. And when we can argue that undercard fights can successfully make it to almost any other main card, that shows you how deep this one is. And we just can't wait until next weekend. So we are a week and not even a week and a half away from the show, Jason. That's all there is to say. I mean, we're waiting with bated breath now for the event, and July 11th can't come soon enough. So, Jason, thank you for joining me here once again. We're going to call it a wrap for the day. We'll be back tomorrow with more. For Torch columnist Jason Bent, this is Jamie Penix signing off.